Okay. Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Many years ago, before 9/11, before there was any guard in the yeshiva buildings, there used to be a cardinal in Paris by the name Cardinal Lustiger. He was born Jewish. His parents were non-observant Jews. And in the Second World War, they gave him over to Christians to hide. And he was brought up as a Christian, and then he converted, and he somehow didn't see a contradiction between being a Jew and a Christian at the same time. So on one occasion, he was visiting New York, and he walked into Yeshiva building without his big de kuhuna, and
Robinson.
It's okay now? I'm okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
So he was walking around the building and he noticed that the rabbein were giving shiur in the morning in the same classrooms where on the blackboard there were obviously formula from chemistry and physics, mathematics, obviously the same students in the morning who study Torah, studied secular studies in the afternoon. And there in Europe, where he came from, he was from Paris, in Europe, whoever goes to university doesn't want to go to a theological seminary. It's a contradiction. So somehow by us, there's no contradiction. They want to know how come? So he guessed on his own that it must be because of the Harusa system that we have that they don't have. So he went up to Dr. Lam's office. Bimikre, Dr. Lam happened to be in the office. Usually Dr. Lam was running around Arba Kampasaurus raising money for the yeshiva. That day happened to be in his office. And this Cardinal Lustiger asked the secretary, can he speak to Dr. Lam? So she says, yeah, he was free. Never happened in the history of the world that Dr. Lam would be free to speak to a stranger. He didn't even know who it was. Anyway, it was Cardinal Lustiger. So he asked, he'd like to bring a group of cardinals to the yeshiva to study the Harusa system because he thinks that somehow that's going to solve his problem, that there won't be any longer a contradiction between theological studies and college and university studies if they learn B'Harus. So they had a few meetings. So after he passed away, they came a few times. They came every year, every year and a half, every 2 years. A whole group of cardinals would come. and then after he passed away, so the Rosh HaMadabrim, who yarshined his position, was the new cardinal in Paris, who was not born a Jew. And they didn't speak English, they only spoke French, so they needed a translator. So the rabbeim who met with him would speak in English, and the translator would say it in French, and they would speak in French, and the translator would say it in English. But the Rosh HaMadabrim, the cardinal of Paris, would always come every time he would speak, he would come with a whole speech prepared in English, and he would read with his broken English, he would read it. And everyone had a copy, so we knew what he wanted to say. So every time they came up with a new Einfall, why we should work together on something, they knew Rabbi Soloveitchik's guidelines by heart, inside out. We're not allowed to work on any theological issues together, but on social issues we can work together. So every time they came up with something, every single time, Dr. Lam had to be mafsik in the middle. That's not what it means, and it's not so. I remember on one occasion, the Cardinal of Paris came up with a suggestion. We should both work together to push the Ten Commandments on the whole world. Because the Ten Commandments, that's universal. And they keep the Ten Commandments. They observe Shabbos. They observe on Sunday. They don't observe exactly the way we observe it, but they observe the Ten Commandments also. So we have something in common. We should work on that together to get everybody to observe the Ten Commandments. The Dr. Lam was mopsing him in the middle, and he said, Ten Commandments are only for the Jewish people. Shabbos is, the Nochrim are not permitted to observe Shabbos every single time. So I remember one occasion, the Cardinal of Paris in recent years, maybe 5 years ago, five, 6 years ago, he came up with a new Einfall that they understand that this is modern Orthodox, Yeshiva University, and Rabbi Soloveitchik was modern Orthodox, and they understand modern Orthodox means you can live in the regular world and still be considered an Orthodox Jew. So how can it be? You live in the world. They do kol davar aser, all kinds of things, and you're still considered Orthodox. Isn't it a contradiction? How is that considered Orthodox? So he was told that it's based on the principle of Dina de Malchus Adina. The Jewish religion recognizes whatever the Umas HaOlam decide. So the Galach wanted to know, how can that be considered orthodox? Tell me, what's the secret? The Dina and the Malchus Adina. So Dr. Lem had to be mafsikim in the middle. He said, Dina and the Malchus Adina doesn't mean that. It just means you have to pay taxes. So that was the end of the whole discussion. So what does Dina and the Malchus Adina mean? It doesn't mean anything in the area of Isavaheta. It only applies in Didi moments. Rabbi Soloveitchik told over the story that years ago, he used to commute back and forth by plane. From first, he used to come by bus, I guess, or by train. I don't know. He used to commute to New York, and then he switched to come by plane. So he said he noticed that there was once a Reform rabbi on the plane, and he was very upset about the Reform, why they permit an Eishes Ish to remarry without a get. So he walked over to the Reform rabbi before the plane took off, and he asked them, how can you allow a couple to get married without a get? It's against the din and the Torah. It's a violation of the Seiros HaDibros. It says, lo sinof. So he says, the Reform rabbi said, Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. Don't you know that in 1934 or something, we had a convention and we decided that din and the machus adina, that we followed the law of the land. So if the government says that they're divorced, they don't need a get. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, but you perform a wedding, why don't you say Dina Machus Adina? Let them get married by the justice of the peace. So the Reform rabbi tells him, Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. You don't realize that there's a difference between getting married and getting divorced. When you get married, you say bracha. So that shows that that's a mitzvah. When you get divorced, you don't recite any bracha. So that shows it's not a mitzvah, it's just a din. So Dina Machus Adina. We follow the law of the land. So the distinction is correct. One is a mitzvah, one is not a mitzvah, but it's half right. It's half right. In the whole area of Yisrael, we certainly do not apply din and machus din. There used to be in New York, there used to be blue laws that you're not allowed to keep your store open on Sunday because this is a Christian country and it's a day of rest. But you can keep your store open on Shabbos. So a Jewish person is allowed to keep his store open on Shabbos. You're not allowed to. You don't apply din and machus din in Issa v'Heter. It only applies in the area of Dini Mamanis. And in fact, when we learned in the Kailo, the topic of Dini Machus Adin in the end of Bava Kamed, there's a whole sugya. Rabban Lichtenstein encouraged us all to learn at that time the first tshuva in the Dvar Avram, which is very, very strong tshuva about Dini Machus. So he points out that many Rishonim say in the beginning of Masechah Sanhedrin, that the principle of Hefker Bezna Hefker is a branch, is an offshoot from Dina de Machus Adina. If the government is not taking care of what they're supposed to take care of, then the Bezdin takes the place of the government. We know Hefker Bezna Hefker is only in Dina Mamanis, doesn't apply in Issa v'Heter. So Dina de Machus Adina is the power. That's the basis for Hefker Bezna Hefker. So Dina de Machus is only in Dina Mamanis. There was, during the lifetime of Rabbi Yosef Karo, there was a Maharit Sahalon. He was known, there were two Gedolim in the same time known as Maharitats. One of them was Rabbi Yontif Sahalon. He was a young man when the Beis Yosef passed away. And one was Rabbi Yosef Taitatzak. He was the rabbi in Constantinople, I think. He also had a magid, he had a magid of Torah Shebichsav, and Rabbi Yosef Kara had a magid, a malach teach him the magid of the Mishnah, the magid of the Torah Shemalpeh. And this Rabbi Yosef Kara's magid of the Torah Shemalpeh was on a higher level than the magid of the Maritats. Anyway, so the Marit Tzahalon was a young man when the Beis Yosef passed away. He was sent as a shliach by the Rabbanim in Tzfat. Most of the Tamir Chama at that time lived in Tzfat, because the water was polluted in Yerushalayim, and the water was clear in Tzfat. And another reason was because the Gemara says that Eser Golias Golsa Sanhedrin, towards the end of the Baisheni period, the Sanhedrin went into Golis 40 years before the Churban HaBayis. Sanhedrin went into Golis, and then they went from location to location to location, Eser Golias, corresponding to the Eser Golias of Golsa Shechina at the end of the Bais Rishon period. And the Gemara has a tradition, and the Rambam quotes it in the Mishnah Torah, that the Bezn HaGadol will reconvene in the last place where they met. Like every day, people from the Bezn HaGadol would go home and go to sleep, and then they would come back, they would reconvene the next day. So now it's been around 2,000 years since the Bezn HaGadol convened. The last time they convened was 40 years before the Churban HaBayis. Bayis Sheni was Churban in the year 70. So in the year 30, they left the Lishkas HaGazis. So they're going to reconvene in the same location where they met the last time. Where they meet the last time? Somewhere in the Galil. So the and the Gemara says in Erevin that Eliyahu Navi will come the day before Mashiach. Pasuk in the end of Malachi says, "Hina nechu shulach lahem and seli ha-Navi, lefnei bayom Hashem ha-gorul ha-Noira." So the Gemara interprets the pasuk to mean, Eliyahu Navi will come the day before the Melech Hamashiach to announce the coming of Mashiach. Where will he come? Where is Eliyahu Navi going to come? So the Gemara says, he will appear to the Bez Nagol. So that's why they were interested in being the Kabbal Pnei Eliyahu Navi. We talk in Yiddish, we talk about making a Kabbalah spawning for the Melech Hamashiach. But in the Gemara, they talk about a Kabbalah spawning for Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come the day before the Melech HaMashiach. So that's why, that's one of the reasons why they wanted to have the Chiddush HaSmicha, because they wanted to prepare a Sanhedrin that should be prepared, a Sanhedrin should be ready to be able to be Mekabal Eliyahu HaNavi and to hasten the coming of Mashiach. Anyway, so this Marit Tzahalon was a young man. He was, I think, younger than 20. He was sent as a messenger by the Rabbanim in Tzfat to visit the Jewish communities in the neighboring Arab countries surrounding Eretz Israel, to tell them that it's not proper that when someone dies, a Jewish person dies and it leaves a big Yerusha, that they follow Din and the Malchusa. Because Din and the Malchusa, Din doesn't apply when all the parties involved are Jewish. It only applies when one of the parties is a non-Jew. That's a Gemara in the end of Bava Kamma. The Gemara has what sounds like a very strange din, but we'll explain it in a minute. The Gemara says if you have a Jewish bezin and two people come for a court case, a Jew and a non-Jew come for a court case, so the bezin should always, the Gemara's lashon is a Yisrael and an Akum. Akum usually means a non-Jew, but here the Rambam says it means an Ovid Avodah Zarah, a non-Jew who worships Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, if one is a Jew, one is an Akum, so the Bezdin should always try to favor the Jew. So if according to Jewish law, the Jew wins in a court case, the Bezdin should say, we're going to pass them based on Jewish law. If the Jew will win according to Dinei Akum, according to Dinei the Machusa, they should pass them based on Dinei the Machusa. So that's not fair. What kind of shtick is that? So the Rambam explains in Mishneh Torah, the Rambam explains that we're talking about a Nochri who's Ovid Avodah Zarah. So he's in violation of one of the basic Shevet Mitzvah, the basic mitzvah, the Shevet Mitzvah Nech, not to worship Avodah Zarah. So we're gunning out to get him. So the Rambam says, what if there's a court case between a Jew and a Nochri who's not an Ovid Avodah Zarah? Then you're not gunning out to get him. He's a nice person. What do we have against him? So then you paskan based on Dinei B'nei Noach. Then you paskan based on Dinei Machusa. Dina the Machusa Dina applies automatically whenever there are two non-Jews, let's say in Europe. The Bati Dinim, I remember I once visited in Toronto. We had a meeting of the Rabbanim in Toronto. They were saying that they had a bezin. This was many years ago. They said they had a bezin in Toronto of Rabbanim. And they had such a good reputation. Non-Jews would come to the bezin. Both parties were non-Jews. The Tavei and the Nitva, both parties would come to the Jewish Bezin because they knew that they were fair and they wouldn't take a year to get a maskana and they wouldn't charge an arm and a leg. And they knew that they were intelligent rabbis. So in Europe also, that was not so uncommon that two non-Jewish people who had a dispute together, and the Amorites would come to a Jewish Bezin for a psak. So when the Jewish Bezin paskins, where both parties are non-Jews, what law are they supposed to follow? So the din is supposed to follow din and the machusa. That's one of the Shevet Mitzvahs ben Erech is dinim. And dinim, the Ramban, Achumish says that dinim means they have to observe all the chaptal, rabbis, and zikin. But we usually assume not like that Ramban. We usually assume they have to follow din and the machusa, whatever dinim means, that the government has a right to make up any system of law, din and the machusa. If both parties are Jewish, let's say a Jewish person dies and he has all kinds of relatives, so then all the parties involved are Jewish. So then you don't follow Dina de Machusa. But if one of the parties involved is a non-Jew, or both other parties involved are a non-Jew, then Halacha says that the Jewish person should paskin based on Dina de Machusa. Unless one is a Yisrael, one is an Akum, then the Rambam interprets the Gemara, then we're gunning out to penalize him. So then we always try to favor the Yisrael. Emati yochel zakosa b'dini Yisrael zakeyu. Emati yochel zakosa b'dini the machusa zakeyu. So the Marit Tzahalom was sent as a teenager, I think, to the Jewish communities in the Arab countries surrounding Eretz Yisrael to tell them that it's not proper that they follow Dina de Machusa in Hilchas Yerusha, because since all the parties involved are Jewish, so Dina de Machusa does not apply over here. You look in the Rambam has an interesting comment in Hilchas Nachlas. We don't really have this in the Gemara. We don't know exactly where the Rambam got it from. There's a sefer that's called the Medrash HaGadol. I think the manuscript came from Egypt. So some say that the Rambam got it from the Medrash HaGadol. Others say the Medrash HaGadol was composed later based on the Rambam. The source of the Medrash HaGadol is from the Rambam. So we're not sure exactly what the source is, but the Rambam writes that the Gemara in Yesh Nechlem makes a statement that even though we have a kalal, a masna mashikasa batayra, the dovish of the moment, tenoi kayam, inisa veheta, tenoi batal, let's say a man says, Hariat Mukadeshusli, on the condition that if I'm not happily married, you don't need a get. Or on the condition that if I die leaving no children, you won't need chalitza. So that's called Masna Mashkas Batara and Tanoi Bottle. The mice is Kaim and the Tanoi is Bottle. But if it's Dovash Mimaman, let's say I hire you as a worker on the condition that if any dispute comes up, we follow Dine de Malchusa. Instead of following Chashimish, but we follow Dine de Malchusa. So that's Masna Mashkas Vatar B'davish HaMemamet. So that's a Machleg Zameh Reb Yudah in Bava Metzia, and we paskin like Reb Yudah, that B'davish HaMemamet Tanai Kayim. You can make any Tanai, call Tanai HaMemamet is Kayim. So the Gemara says, though, an exception to the rule is Yerusha, Masna Mashkas Vatar and Yerusha Tanai Botel. So it's a little unclear, the explanation in the Gemara, why Yerusha should be different. The Gemara gives some kind of an explanation. The Rambam doesn't say what it says. The Rambam says because we treat Yerusha as if it were Issa Veheta, even though it's Yerusha is an issue of dollars and cents, an amount of money, it should really be Dovshim Mammon Tanoi Kayom. But still, since the Pasuk introduces the Parsha of Yerusha, V'hoisozos Lechem Lechukas Mishpat, even though it's Mishpat, even though Yerusha is dollars and cents, it's an issue of Dini Mammonis, the Torah considers it a chuk as if it were Issa Beheter. So just like in Issa Beheter, the din is a masa mashkas batara tonight batel. So with respect to Yerusha, also tonight batel. That's relevant sometimes, halacha lemaase in Hilchas Yerusha. Maybe we'll get to that later. Maybe there'll be a separate shiur on Yerusha. Okay. So the Rambam writes that that Yerusha is treated like Issa Beheter. It's treated like Yisavetta for sure. There's such a thesis in Ksubis also. The Yerusha is treated like Yisavetta. Tesis doesn't say that Pasuk, Chukas, Mishpat, even though it's Mishpat, you treat it as if it's Chukas. Tesis just shows from the Gemara like that, that you treat it like Yisavetta. So that's another reason. The Maritats, the Marit Tzahalon wrote to explain the reason why Dina Machusa doesn't apply, because all the parties involved are Jewish. So Dina Machusa doesn't apply. And this is an additional reason based on the Rambam that we treat Yerusha as if it were a matter of Issa Veheta. And in Issa Veheta, Dina Machusa does not apply. People make a mistake. They think Dina Machusa, Dina allows me to take someone to court. Let's say two Jewish people entered into an agreement. And they signed a contract, and they wrote, and in case there'll be any dispute, either party has the right to take the other one to secular court. So is that called Masna Malcha Kasamatar B'Dovish B'Mammon or not? So that we consider Issa Veheta. That's not, to go to our court, to go to Goyish court is considered Issa Veheta. That's not permissible. It's a double poshut. Years ago, the Goyish court, the government, the Goyish court used to be sponsored by the government. The government used to be officially a Christian government or some sponsored by another religion. So the Goyish court was sponsored by religion. So loymed boy, if a person, a Jew, takes another Jew to Goyish court and it's a court that's sponsored by another religion, then it's, of course, it's an Issa. It's Rashi and Chumash quotes the Loshan and Chazal, Ilui Yirosam, you're giving honor and glory to the Avodah Zarah of the Nochrim. But the din of the prohibition of Arkois doesn't only apply if it's a goyish kut sponsored by an Avodah Zarah religion, even if it's a neutral, just a secular goyish kut, secular kut. Also, there's an Isser Arkois. Rav Herzog wrote a lot about Didi Mamonis. He was the chief rabbi of Eretz after Rav Kook passed away. And when Ben-Gurion founded the government at the time of HaKamas HaMedina, he was waiting for a phone call from Ben-Gurion to help him. Rav Herzog should have, he had already published his book in English. He was from Ireland originally. He already published his book in English about Dini Mamonis, about Jewish law, Jewish jurisprudence. He was waiting for the phone call from Ben-Gurion to help set up the court system. And Arayim Azaz still waiting for the phone call. He was very upset about that, that Ben-Gurion never consulted him. And he writes in his book that if it's a Jewish government, a Jewish country with secular law, that's a bigger issue of our cause. Jewish people are following, in Eretz Yisrael, most of the Dinim Ominous laws that they follow are either British laws or Arab laws or Turkish laws. Very little Jewish laws. I remember years ago, the only halacha that the Mishpat Ivri, the only area of halacha in the Dinim Ominous that the government adopted, the Knesset adopted, was about HaShabbos Aveda. What about the whole Chosha Mishpat? That was terrible. So if, let's say, two people agree, they sign a contract together, then in case there'll be a dispute in the Dinim Ominous, either party reserves the right to take the other one to secular court. That's called Master Mashal Kasabatar, the Isser, the Heter, because to go to Arkois is an Isser. That's considered an Avera. Master Mashal Kasabatar would help, though. Let's say if two Jews enter into a business agreement and they say, but if any issue comes up, we want to follow Dina de Malchusa. We don't want to follow Dina Hatar. So that's called Dabashim Imamin. They can make such a Tanai. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, they talk about that. When you have a dispute between two parties and both parties are Jewish, when should the Bezin Paskin based on Dina Machusa? So the Shach quotes from the Mordechai, who quotes from the Balei Taisus. I don't think we have this in Taisus, but the Mordechai quotes it. In case you have Jewish businessmen who deal with Jewish and non-Jewish customers alike, and when they deal with the non-Jewish customers, the non-Jewish business associates, so they follow Dina de Machusa. When one party is non-Jewish, then the halacha automatically says Dina de Machusa applies. So then you tell a person he has to screw his head on differently depending on who the customer is. If it's a Jew, he has to think in terms of halacha. And if it's a Nochri, whom he's dealing a businessman, then he has to think in terms of Dina de Machusa. So he's probably most of his customers are going to be the non-Jewish. Non-Jews, so he's always thinking in terms of Dina de Malchusa. So even though he never said it, whatever is self-understood is Kilu Hisnu. Whatever is the Minig Hamdina, that's the Klal in the Mishnah. Whatever is Minig Hamdina is considered Kilu Hisnu. So since the Minig Hamdina is that a person who deals in business with Jews and non-Jews always thinks in terms of Dina de Malchusa, so even when a Jew comes in, it's considered, that's the Minig Hamdina, that they always follow Din of the Machusa, so then it's Kilu Hisnu, and then that's the Din Deraisa, if it's considered Kilu Hisnu. The Mishnah has like this, let's say the Gemara learns that from the Pasuk in Bacha Napshti, that the Yetzi Olav Lefoloi Balabadosa Yadei Orif, that a person has to work, I think, from Alos HaShacha till Tseis HaKachav, and something like that, and that's considered a whole day's work. So let's say I hire a worker and I tell him I'll pay him whatever, $5,000 a week. Comes the end of the week, so he says he worked all 6 days of the week, 7 days of the week, and he wants to get paid. So I say, but you didn't work from Alois HaShachat till Tzeis HaKacham. So he says, what? He never heard of that. I said, that's a bit fair. We should pass in Baruch HaNapshi. You only work from 9 to 5, or 9 to 5:30. So I'm not mechuyif to pay you all the money. So he says, what, are you crazy? Nobody works from Alois HaShachat till Tzeis HaKacham. So the Mishnah says in Bava Metzia, if the Minig Hamdina is that you don't work all day long, so whatever is the Minig Hamdina is considered Kilu Hisnu. So that's what the Chazon Ish writes about that Shach. The Shach quoted from the Mordechai And the name of the Balei HaTosis, that a Jew who deals in business with Jews and non-Jews, and when he deals with the non-Jews, he clearly thinks in terms of Din and the Machus and not in Halacha. So even when he deals with the Jews, he doesn't always know who, which customers are Jewish, which customers are non-Jewish. So then we assume that it's Kilu Hisnu, that he's always going to follow the Din of the Malchus and the Chazon Ish writes in Chosh Mishpat. That, so that then becomes the Din. They have to go to a Jewish Bezin, and the Jewish Bezin has to pass them based on the Din of the Malchus. It's not always smart to have a Bezin of three Rabbanim. Maybe sometimes you should have a Bezin of three businessmen. The businessmen will know better than the Rabbanim what the Din of the Malchus is. So sometimes that would be recommended. The Shach has another Chiddush. He said there's another case where the two parties involved, the Tevel and Nitva, are both Jewish, and we follow Din and the Machusa. The Shach writes this, he doesn't quote this from the Rishonim. This he says on his own. If you have a case where the Halach has nothing to say, the Halach has nothing to say, so then you follow Din and the Machusa. So the Chazon Ish has a Hasag on the Shach. Such a case doesn't exist. The Halach has what to say on every single case. You may not know what the Halach says, so you have to break your head. Let the Bezin break the head and figure out what the Halacha has to say. But it's not that the Halacha has nothing to say. The Halacha always has what to say. Quite a few years ago, we had some professor from Yale, if I'm not mistaken, come to the yeshiva to get some brilliant people to join his program in Yale. So he said his first interest was law. So I think he went to law school. So he said he realized you can draw up a contract that's not covered by any law at all. If you're sharp, you can draw up a contract that will not be covered by any law at all. But then when he started to study Daf Yomi, when he started to study Gemara, he came to the realization that in Jewish law, that's impossible. There's no case in the world that's not covered by the halacha. Either the halacha says yechayiv or yepata. The halacha has what to say on every single case. There's never a case that that the halacha has nothing to say. So that's what the Chazon Ish is against the Shach. What did the Shach say? If there's a case where the halacha has nothing to say, Abosha Weiss writes in one of his chulas that let's say the halacha has nothing to say about corporations. There's no halacha about corporations. So since the halacha doesn't say anything, so he followed it in the Machusa, that we consider the corporation as if it's owned by the dummy corporation. It's not owned by the shutfim. What I mean, the halacha has nothing to say. It's a big machlokes in the poskim, where the halacha recognizes the whole concept of a corporation or not. Rav Moshe holds the halacha does not recognize corporations, and it's really a shutfis, but it's only a Shibin HaChosim, it's not a Shibin HaGuf. Another poskim said, no, that there is such a concept as a Chal HaShem Bailim, let's say Hegdish, is not a person who owns something, or Tzedakah. Tzedakah owns money. It's a Chal HaShem Bailim. It's a corporation of Tzedakah owns something. So just like there's a corporation over there, so any group of people can make up their own corporation also. And the other, and Rav Moshe held, no, you can't make up your own corporation. Tzedakah and Hegdish is a Chal HaShem Bailim. And every other Bailim has to be a person. That's a big question. The Chazon Ish came up with a Chiddush. This is not in the Sifrei Chazon Ish. People quoted in his name that if you live in any democratic country, if you live in a country where the king owns the whole country and he owns all the government buildings and he owns everything, so then if you steal something from a government building, it's gzeila from the king. And whoever doesn't pay taxes is hareza gozel menas hamelech, the Rambam writes. He's stealing the money that the king is entitled to. But if you live in a democracy, so you pay your taxes, who do you make out your check to? The IRS. So who owns the money? Let's say you go to a government office. So who owns the tables and the chairs and the pens and the pad of paper? The government. So the Chazon Ish, there's no such thing as a Chal HaShem Bailim of the government. So he came up with a chiddush that if you can walk off with all the furniture and get away with it, and the police won't put you in jail, it's mutter, because it's all hefker, it doesn't belong to anybody. The Minchas Yitzchok is a collection of chulas by Dayan Weiss from the Eidah Haredes. So they asked him the question, that in Eretz Yisrael, Tenuva is a government agency that buys up all of the tvua, everything that grows by all the farmers in Eretz Yisrael. And then after they buy it up, it belongs to the government, then they appoint the mashgich and the mafish shumus amaisus. So according to the Chazon Ish, everything the government owns is hefker, because it's a democracy. So there is no chaloshen bailam of government. So hefker is potter from shumus amaisus. You can't have afrashis shumus amaisus on hefker. So how does it jive with the Chazon Ish? So the Minchas Yitzchak says, Anachinami, that this system existed before the Chazon Ish came to Eretz Yisrael, and the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael obviously didn't accept this idea of the Chazon Ish. They held not so. Now, there is a Chalashem Bailam of government, but it doesn't necessarily follow that there's a Chalashem Bailam of corporation. That's a question. So that's what Rav Moshe Weiss held, that since the Halacha has nothing to say about a corporation, that we should follow Din Machusa and assume that there is such a Chalashem Bailam. And Rav Moshe thinks that the Halacha does have what to say. Halacha says we don't accept it. It doesn't exist. Halacha has what to say in every case. Just you have to break your head and figure out what the Halacha says and what the Halacha doesn't say. The main, like Dr. Lam said, the main theme that appears in the Gemara, that Dina the Machusa Dina, is really with respect to paying taxes. That's the main place where the Gemara says it. What is it based on? So there's a famous Ran in Nidorim, the middle of the Nidorim in the Chops, where the Ran quotes in the name of the Balei HaTosfos that paying taxes is basically paying rent. The country belongs to the king. The king of every country owns the country. And if you want to live, let's say I own an apartment building, and if you want to live in my building, you want to rent an apartment, you have to pay rent. So if you want to live in France belongs to the king of France, and Great Britain belongs to the queen of England. So if you want to live in France or in England, they have the right to charge you rent to live in their country. So if you don't pay rent, then it's gezalakum. You're stealing. You're living in someone else's country without their rishus. So that's what the Ran quotes in the name of Balei HaTosfos. Bamedvarim Amurim. When do you say like that? That's every other country other than Eretz Yisrael. But Eretz Yisrael belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The pasuk says, Kili kol ha'aretz. The end of Chumash Vayikra. Kili kol ha'aretz. So the Sfarno says, every other country belongs to the king of the country. Eretz Yisrael belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kindalach, I want all the Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael. So no king has a right to charge tax in Eretz Yisrael, because the whole idea of collecting tax is that you have to pay for rent. But Eretz Yisrael doesn't belong to the king. Eretz Yisrael belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kidikol HaAretz. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave all the Jewish people permission, more than permission. He wants us to live. He encourages us. We should all live in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, no king has the right to charge tax in Eretz Yisrael. No government, Jewish or otherwise, has the right to charge tax in Eretz Yisrael. This opinion, so that's why many Jews in Eretz Yisrael follow this run, the shame that Balei HaTosfos, that you don't have to pay tax in Eretz Yisrael. That's utterly ridiculous, because in the Shulchan Aruch, that the Ran, B'Shem Taisus, has not been accepted. Just the reverse. Different sections, when you learn for Smicha, so you come to the realization, different sections of the Shulchan Aruch are based on different Sfarim. Like when you learn Yeridei Chelek Aleph, so everything in Chelek Aleph Yeridei is based on the Rashba and the Taras Abayis. If you learn Hilchas Avelis, everything is based on the Ramban and Hilchas Avelis and the Rosh. In the end of my cut. In Choshe Mishpat, big chunks of Choshe Mishpat are based on the Sefer HaTrumos. Sefer HaTrumos was written by a Talmud of the Ramban. So big chunks of Choshe Mishpat are based on the Sefer HaTrumos. And other sections are quoting straight from the Ramban, word for word from the Ramban. So that section in the end of Choshe Mishpat, where you have Dina and the Machusa Dina, that section in the Shulchan Aruch is straight word for word from the Rambam, and the Rambam writes like this: the government has a right to levy taxes, not only the Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, even a Goyish government in another country, but the original din of taxes is in Eretz Yisrael. Why? So the Meiri writes on Sanhedrin in the second parak, and the Bir Agro writes on Choshen Mishpat, when it says in Choshen Mishpat that the government has a right to levy taxes. So that's based on a machlokes Rabbi Shmuel in the second parak in Sanhedrin. We just had the Haftorah of Parshas Korach, was where the nation, Klal Yisrael, requested a king. They didn't want Shmuel HaNavi to be the leader. They wanted the Hanhaga should be a king like all the other nations in the world. So Shmuel HaNavi, this part is not in the Haftarah, but it's in Sefer Shmuel. Shmuel HaNavi tells them, he read to them the Riot Act. He said, you don't want a king. The king is going to levy taxes, and it's going to take your sons, he's going to draft your children into the army, going to take your daughters as pilakshim, they're going to make you work very hard. And he tells all the people, all the evils of the king. That's called Parshas HaMelech. So the Gemara quotes in the second paragraph, Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel, Kol Hama b'Parshas Melech, all the things that Shmuel HaNavi warned the people, you don't want a king. And they said, nonetheless, they do want a king. All the things, are these, all the Dvarim Hama b'Parshas Melech, Melech Mutabo and Melech Asabo, are these illegal? These are the rights of the king? The king has a right to take their daughters as pilakshim, has a right to levy taxes, and has a right to make your children serve in the army and work for him to build his palace and so on. But he says, no, Melech Asabo, these are all the illegal things that the kings do. So Shmuel says, Melech Mutabo. So that's what the Bir Agra says, and the Meiri writes in the Sanhedrin, Shmuel is saying, Lishitasa. Shmuel is the one that says, Dina de Malchus Adina. The government has a right to levy taxes because Lishitasa, the marker is the Parshas HaMelech, and Sefer Shmuel, Kol Ha'am and Parshas Melech, Melech Mutabo. So the original din in the Chumash, in the Navi Shmuel, is talking about a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. And we even apply it to any other government in any other country in the world. So we don't really accept that Ran B'Shem Ba'alei HaTosfos, that you don't have to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael, that the whole theory of taxes is based on the king owns the country, and he has the right, if you want to live in his country, he has the right to charge you rent, and the taxation, that you, the taxes you have to pay, is really a form of paying rent. So we don't accept that, because then you wouldn't have to pay any taxes in Eretz Yisrael. It's a separate thing. The government has a right to charge taxes. Truth of the matter is that even if one would accept the Ran, Shulchan Aruch said beferish, we don't accept the Ran, Rishayim Tosfos. Truth of the matter is, even if you would accept the Ran, that you don't have to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't apply to a democracy. You don't have to pay taxes just to live in Eretz Yisrael, because the government, you can't say the king of Eretz Yisrael owns the land and he has a right to charge you rent. The land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he tells all the Jewish people, he gives them permission to live rent-free in Eretz Yisrael. But when you have a democracy, it's a different, the chiyuv is different. It says in Chosha Mishpat that if a lot of people live together in a city, so they, and some of the people demand they want to have a mikveh, some people want to have a shul, some people want to have a library, some people want to have a drugstore, whatever. So if enough people make a request and it's a reasonable thing, we treat all the people who live in the same community who have shared certain needs together as if they're shutfim. They never became shutfim, never enter into shutfis. We treat them as if they're shutfim. So let's say you have 10 people go into shutfis together. What there used to be a store, Corvettes, EJ Corvettes. No, EJ, they went out of business many years ago. EJ Kovetz was a Rosh Hashanah. 11 Jewish Korean veterans. There were 11 Jewish Korean veterans. They went to Shutfus together and they made a store. And they didn't want everybody to know that they were Jewish. So they called EJ Kovetz. So let's say you have 11 people who go into Shutfus. They have a shoe business, let's say. At the end of the year, so there's a machlokes. They made millions of dollars selling shoes. At the end of the year, there's a machlokes. So some of them say we should, instead of everybody taking all the revach this year, no one should take any revach. Everybody should leave all the money in the business. We're doing so well. We should open our bench in Paris and another bench in London. We'll make $5 billion next year instead of only making $1 million. And others say, no, I'm not interested in risking all of my money. I want to get the revach from this year. So how do you decide when there's a machlokes among the shutfim? How do you decide? So on Shulchan Aruch, they quote a Tosefta that it says you go basarayv, whatever the majority of the shareholders say. That's like one guy has 90 shares, and the other one only has 5 shares. You don't say it's one-to-one. You don't count by people. It depends how many shares you have. You have 90 shares, so you have 90% of the shares, so you already have the rayv. So the Vilna Gaon writes, what's the makar of the Tosefta? What's the marker of the Tosefta that you go Basar Rav? So he says, it's a Pasuk in Mishpatim, Acharav Lahatas. Acharav Lahatas, I always thought it goes on a Bezin, where there's a split vote in Bezin, and you go Basar Rav. But apparently it goes on Shutvim in a business also, if you have Shutvim, and now the Machlekes had it go, so you follow the Rav. So let's say you have a community, and some of the people want to have a park, they want the community to collect money to make a park, others don't want. So you go Basar Rav to decide, you don't really need a park. If some people want a mikveh and others don't, let's say a Jewish community, so they all share together and need, they all married and they all need a mikveh. And some of them say, I'll drive to the next village. I don't need a mikveh for Shabbos and Yom Tov. I'll always go to mikveh on the weekdays, and I'm prepared to, rather than put in so much money to build a local mikveh, I'll drive to the next village only 10 minutes away. So there it says in the Shulchan Aruch that you don't go Basar Rav. The one who has the gerecht the taina wins. If we know whose taina is correct, then you don't go Basar Rav. But if both tainas are correct, then the din is that you go Basar Rav. So let's say in New York City. So do we need a public school or not? So the religious Jews don't need a public school. We send our children to day schools, to yeshivas. But the majority of the people in New York City are not sending their children to yeshivas. The majority of the people say, we need a public school. So everybody has to chip in, even those who don't have any children at all, even those who send their children to yeshiva. Whatever the Rav wants. And if Rav of the people want the parks, even the miyut have to go along. So whenever you have a democracy, the taxes that they collect are only to cover the expenses. You have to have a police force. We all want a police force to protect us. There are certain needs that are taken care of by the municipal government, some taken care of by the state government, some taken care of by the federal government. The delivery of mail is the federal government. The army is the federal government to protect us from other countries. The highways are state. The state takes care of it, state universities and so on. The majority of the people say we need a state university. We have a Jewish university. What do we need the state university? But the miyut have to go along. We have to pay because the right of the people feel they do need a state university. And we pay three levels of taxes, federal taxes, state taxes, and municipal taxes, because each one of the three, we should them on three different levels. We should them in a municipal level and in a state level and in a federal level of the country, because different needs are taken care of by the different people. So the paying of the taxes is like shutvin. And if a person doesn't pay taxes, the Rambam wouldn't say in a democracy, Harei ze gozel menas hamelech. Whoever was appointed as the president was appointed, we had an election and we appointed the person as the president. So he's entitled to get whatever salary the Congress decides, what salary he gets. He's entitled, he does his work. If we don't like him, so we should impeach him. Or if we don't like him, well, we won't re-elect him next time, okay? But we were the ones who elected him. So, but if you don't pay taxes, you can't say, raise the gozel menas hamelech. You're stealing from all the other shutvim. Let's say you have the 11 Jewish Korean veterans made a shutvim together, and they all decided that they should leave all of the revach in the business to develop the business further. If that's what the majority decided, and one wise guy is going to keep the revach for himself, he's not going to give it back, not going to kick it back into the business. He's stealing from the other 11 shutvim, stealing from the other shutvim. It's not gezel from the government. The government, whenever you have a democracy, the government is just like the MC. The government is just taking care of the shutvis. But there's a shutvis of all the people who live in the country, the shutvis of all the people who live in the city, and all the people who live in the state. So whoever doesn't pay tax is stealing from all the other shutvim. It's not gezel akum. This is mamash gezel Yisrael. It's not gezel akum. Before you had a democracy and the money went to the king, so that was Harei ze gozel menas hamelech. And if it's a nochri melech, so then the Gemara has in the end of Baba Kama that gezel akum is usser. Gezel akum, we paskin for sure is usser, just a question whether it's an iser derais or an iser derabanan. But for sure it is an iser. But havkol salva usser, the Gemara says, is mutter unless you make a chil Hashem. Havkol salva usser means if I owe money to the nochri and I don't pay him the money. So that's also gezel. It's gezel b'shevi altas. It's not gezel b'kum v'yasei. Gezel b'shevi altas. So of course, strictly speaking, there's no iser. unless sometimes it'll come out, usually, not sometimes, it'll come out that it'll be a Chilul Hashem. So of course, al bas is only also if it'll bring about a Chilul Hashem. So that was a diyun in Achrayim. So the Mishnah Malach quotes some of the Achrayim thought, if you live in a country with and you have taxes, and the taxation goes to the king, and the king is an Achri, so if you don't pay your taxes, that's Havkos Halvos. So there's no Issa on that. Havkos Halvos is no Issa unless they catch you. They probably will catch you. So you will cause a Chilul Hashem. But if you don't catch you, not. And most of the Poskim hold that that's not correct. That Havkos Halvos is Mutter by an Achri, doesn't apply by taxes. The government has a right to be mechayiv you to pay the taxes. The kul of hapkod, the Baal HaTanya explains, kul of hapkod halvasa doesn't apply if the money is owed to the government. So that's basically, the Gemara talks about dina and malchus adina in connection with paying taxes. But again, if you have a democracy, then it's a whole different story. Then it's really the Torah Shutfim in Hilchas, in Arachayim, at the end of Hilchas Tfilah, Shachris, you have Hilchas Pesach Nesas. So the Mishnah Berurah there says, look in Chashim Mishpat, in Hilchas Shluchim Mishutfim, where they discuss that the Bnei Huir, Kaifin Echares Hashem, and Livnas Pesach Nesas. It's Midin Shutfim. What do you mean Midin Shutfim? The 11 Jewish Korean veterans joined together, midaitam, to become shutfin. I never became a shutfin with anybody. I was born in the city. I live in the city. How did I become a shutfin with them? So the Shulchan Aruch assumes, based on the Gemara, that if people live in the same area and they share the same needs, if they're all together and they have the same need, they have a din of shutfin. And by shutfin, the halacha says, achram lahatas, you go basarayv, and shutfin ma mechuyiv. Sometimes shutfin ma mechuyiv to pay money to each other. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from Chashim Mishpat that paying to build the shul, to build the mikveh, is we treat all the people who live in the city as if they're all shutfin. What if, let's say, there were two Jewish people who were not supposed to go to Arkois, it's in Iser, and they're supposed to follow Dine Yisrael, and they never made a Tanai in advance. They never made a stipulation when they entered into the business agreement that they're going to follow Din and the Machusa. If they made a stipulation, then the Torah is Machai. And then Yimchuyiv to follow that. That's what the Chazanish writes. Then it's Medaraisi Yimchuyiv. There are some Chassidish Batidinim in New York, they'll say only a Sheikhs who went to university would say such a thing. That the Bezen has to paskin based on Din and Machusa. So the Chazanish was the Sheikhs. And he said, that's what it says in Chayshim Mishpat. If whatever is Minikam Dina is considered Kilu Hisnu, that's Mishnah, it's Hakol Minikam Dina. Whatever there's Minikam Dina, Minikam Dina is to work from 9 to 5. So the guy can't say, but you didn't work from Ados HaShachat to Tzei Sakram, because that's the Minikam Dina. You work from 9 to 5. So whatever is the Minik is considered Kilu Hisnu, whatever Hisnu, that becomes the Din Deraisa. So you have to go to a Yiddish Bezen, but the Yiddish Bezen has the best paskin based on Dina de Machusa, not a paskin based on Dina Hatar. But what happens if two Jewish people had a dispute in Mominus? An employer, an employee, whatever, or a customer and a merchant. And instead of going to Dintar, they went to Goyish court. The Goyish court gave a psak. So then we say, just like we have a Din Hefker Bezen Hefker, and I mentioned earlier that the Dvar Avraham in the first Shuvah, in the first Chelek, has this long Arichas, and he quotes the Rishonim on the beginning of Sanhedrin, on Daf Hei, the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin, that Hefke Bezna Hefke is a branch of Dina de Malchus Adina. If the government is not taking care of what it had the responsibility to take care of, so then the Bezna has to take care of it. So just like the government has the right to make Hefke whatever is necessary. So the Bezen also has a right to do Hefke Bezen Hefke, but it's not a Koyach of Bezen, it's a Koyach of Malchus. So the Chazanish writes a double poshut. If two Jewish people should have gone to a Din Torah, and instead they went to a secular court, they did wrong, they violated the Isser of Arkos, but whatever the judge paskins, even though the Din should have been al pi chesh mishpat, we have our own shulchan aruch chesh mishpat. But since they went to a goyish kot and the goyish kot paskin, so that's like hefke bezn hefke. Always give paskin, so that's the din. Unless bezn decides that they want to penalize the one who initiated this idea to go to the goyish kot, maybe he deserves to be penalized. So maybe if the one who sued the other one in court, he should have gone to Bezdin, and instead he sued him to court, and the other one didn't want to go to court, and he schlepped him. So then the Bezdin has a right to penalize him for violating this Avera, so they may have the right to take away the money that the court awarded him. But a lot of times it won't be the fault of the Taver. They both thought they're going to go to court. Nobody was dreaming at all of going to Yiddish Bezdin. A lot of times, unfortunately, very religious people will go to secular courts. So then you can't really penalize one more than the other. They both deserve to be penalized. So then the psak of the bezin remains. So the Chazon Ish explains in the first perek in Gittin, there's a machlokes in the Gemara. What if one Jew sells karka to another Jew and he didn't make a kinyan with chazake or with kesef? Karka is nicknets bekesef bishtar of a chazok. He didn't make a kinyan b'chazok. He didn't make a kinyan because he made a kinyan bishtar. But the shtar was signed by Nochrim. So it's not a valid shtar. It's not a valid shtar. It's a question. It's a question. If you hold Eidim Mesira Karsi, maybe it is a valid shtar. If you hold Eidim Chasim Karsi, then it's not a valid shtar. Okay. It's not so bushed that it's not a valid shtar. But on the assumption that if the din is not like Reb Meir, it's Machlegs are Meir. And Rav Lozer, Meir holds Eidei Chasim Mekarsi, you have to have kosher Eidim signed on the shtar, that it should function as a shtar kinyan. And we really don't paskin like Rav Meir, we paskin like Rav Lozer, that Eidim is Siri Karsi. So it really should be a kosher shtar. So the Gemara there is discussing on the assumption that the shtar is a possible shtar. If the din would have been like Rav Meir, that Eidei Chasim Mekarsi, you need Eidei Chasim on a shtar kinyan also. On a shtar raya, for sure you need Eidei Chasim. If you're not Eidei Chasim, there's no shtar raya. But the machlokes is what about a shtar kinyan? So Rav Meir's opinion is that in order to function as a shtar kinyan, it first has to function as a shtar raya. If I give you a raya that I married you, that accomplishes that we just became married. If I give my wife a shtar raya that we are divorced, that causes that we just became divorced. If I give you a shtar raya that the house that I own is sold to you, by my giving you a raya that it belongs to you, that causes that it belongs to you. The way to make a shtar kinyan is by giving the other party a shtar raya that it took place, so that causes it to take effect. That's Rav Meir's opinion. We don't paskin like that. We paskin shtar kinyan and shtar raya are totally unrelated. Shtar raya is a edis biksav, and a shtar kinyan is a sibra maisa biksav, and it makes the kinyan. It has nothing to do with the shtar raya. But again, the Gemara there in Gittin is working on the assumption that a shtar kinyan has to have two kosher edim. So what if you have shtar ha'ola bar koyesh on Nochrim? Reuben sold the house to Shimon, sold the karka to Shimon. Karka's nickname is bishtar, but he had a shtar that was signed by two Nochrim, so it's not valid. But a shtar was ha'ola bar koyesh on Nochrim. It was endorsed by the goyish court. So that's a machloikis in the Gemara where they say din in the Malchus Adina or not. How can they say din in the Malchus Adina, but both parties are Jewish? The government has the right to make a law that if one Nochri sells karka to another Nochri, if one of the parties is a Nochri or both of the parties is a Nochri, then you follow Din in the Malchus. But if all the parties involved are Jewish, you don't follow Din in the Malchus. So true, the government made a law that if you have a shtar that's signed by two Nochrim, it's good to be kind of karka. But here the both parties are Jewish. Reuben is selling the karka to Shimon. Reuben and Shimon are both Jewish, so we shouldn't follow Din in the Malchus. So the answer is no, but it's the shtar ha'ola bar koyes. The shtar is signed by Nochrim, and it was endorsed, it was approved by the court. So that's what the Chazon Ish explains, based on the Rabbeinu Yonah and Cheskes Habatim. If they would have gone to our koyes, and the Goyish court would have given a psak on the case, then we would have said, just like Hefker Bezn Hefker in our language. Because really, Hefke Bezn Hefke is just like Din in the Machusa, but the thinking in the way our mind works, just like Bezn has a right to be Mafke, the Goyish government has a right to be Mafke also. Here, the two parties didn't go to the Goyish court to give a psak. They went to the Goyish court to endorse the shtar. So do you consider that the same as endorsing a psak? And we would apply Din in the Machusa, Din like Hefke Bezn Hefke. So the karka is now belongs to the lokeh. Or do you say, no, they only endorsed the shtar. And the shtar is not valid because chasmei amakum. So you wouldn't apply din el machus. So that's a machlokes in the Gemara. The Gemara in Bava Metzia tells about different tanoim, different tzaddikim, who were served as police for the Roman government for Jewish affairs, because the Jews all speak Yiddish and the police didn't understand, the Goyish police didn't understand their language and they could never catch any Jewish criminals. Unfortunately, they were always Jewish criminals, so they could never catch them. So they had to hire Jewish policemen who know how to speak Yiddish and to catch the Jewish criminals. So if there would be a Geneva in town, so the Gemara says, there was Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the one who wrote the Zohar in the cave. And he had his son who was with him in the cave for all those years learning Zohar. Rav Lozzer Bar Rav Shimon. So Rav Lozzer Bar Rav Shimon, after he came out of the cave, what did he do for a living? Gemara says, he was a policeman for the Roman government. And the Gemara says, another Tana also like that, there were policemen for the Roman government. And whenever there would be a Jew who would be yawning over breakfast, he would look to see who's yawning over breakfast. Obviously, he's yawning, he didn't get a good night's sleep. So if he'll be known as a Tam Chacham, Sarab Lozzer Bar Shimon would assume he's probably up late learning, and that's why he's tired in the morning. But if he was not from the learners, he would assume that he probably was up stealing at night. And based on this circumstantial evidence, he would give over the Jewish criminals to the Roman government, and they would give the death penalty. Based on this flimsy circumstantial evidence, they would give the death penalty for Geneva. The din is that by Bnei Noach, they have Sheva Mitzvahs Benach, and the Gemara has an expression, Adin, Azarasam Zui Misasam. When a Ben Noach violates any one of the Sheva Mitzvahs, he's Chayav Misa. The Gemara says, Ben Noach is Nerag, even Apachas Meshava Pruta. If he steals less than the Sheva Pruta, he's Chayav Misa. So Rav Lozzer Bar Shimon used to, based on the Goyishe court, has the right to give the death penalty based on circumstantial evidence. So the Rishonim explained over there, if the Goyish court puts you in prison or puts you to death because you're davening, so he didn't violate any avera. So that's mamish mesira. You have no right to maser over a Jew, shaloi kedin, that the government should punish him, aloi dover, he didn't do anything wrong. If there's a rally supporting Medinas Yisrael and the government arrests all the Jews who attended the rally, that's not right. They have no right. The Jew didn't do any avera. But if the Jew did an avera, he did gezel. In gezel, according to Din HaTorah, you don't deserve the death penalty by Yisraelim. By Bnei Noach, we say azarasim zui misasim. When a Bnei Noach violates any one of the azaras, any one of the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach is chayv misa. But by Jews, there is no such din. So, but if the Jew violated gezel, and according to Dinei Bnei Noach, the government has a right to put you to death for gezel, and the government has the right to put you to death based on circumstantial evidence. So for the Gemara, the Rishonim say in such a case, there's no isa mesira. Strictly speaking, he's not, Rav Lozzer Bar Shimon is not in violation of mesira. He's not responsible for the death of the other person. And the Gemara tells that all the years that he functioned as a policeman for the Roman government, no one was ever put to death shaloi kedin. All the people that he guessed were gazlanim, based on circumstantial evidence, it was always true. It was always true. So the Rishonim say on that Gemara that that's not an isa mesira. The Gemara says mesira is when it's shaloi kedin. Mesira in the days of the Gemara meant all the Jews dress on Shabbos nicely, and the weekdays they dress plain. So the government can't figure out, let's say, my landlord, where I live, my landlord is from the Aguda, and he dresses like me. He has a beard, and he dresses like I do. So you can, maybe I own the building. You don't know who owns the building. That's why there's a chiv mezuzah, and Shulchan Aruch, a rented apartment, chiv mezuzah with the Rabbanon, because it looks like it's a mishum arisai. It looks like the house belongs to me, because nobody knows who it really belongs to. So So Mesirin, the days of the Gemara meant the government can't tell who's rich and who's poor. They didn't have any banks in the days of the Gemara. So the people would stuff all the money in their mattress. So they ask me, tell me, Masa to me, who are the rich Jews and who are the poor Jews? On Shabbos, everybody dresses nicely. And on the weekdays, everybody dresses Rachadik, so you can't tell. So I tell them, this guy's a multimillionaire. Means if you look in his apartment, you'll find all the money stuffed away in his mattress. So the government goes and they steal the money from him. So that's called Mesir. Even though I'm only Moser the Mammon, the Moser is considered like a Roidev, and there's an Issa Mesir. But strictly speaking, let's say someone is cheating on income tax. Someone's violating Din of the Machusa, and I call the police, and I call the government, I call the IRS, and strictly speaking, that's not really a Mesir. That's a different Issa. That's a different Issa. I think in Shulchan Aruch they describe that, that's called Aveda Sakum. The government knows that a lot of people are cheating on income tax because so much money, people earn so much money in the course of the year, they should really be paying much more money to IRS, income tax. So the government knows a lot of people are cheating. So then if you tell them, you look into this nursing home and you'll see the way, if you investigate, you'll check their books and you realize X, Y, Z. You realize that many of the patients died already and they're still collecting money from the government. So they're stealing from the government. So strictly speaking, that's not really Mesir. But it says in Shulchan, because it's Kedin. The government is not going to put them in jail Shalei Kedin. Come and we'll take away all their money because they stole it from the government. So when it's Mesir Kedin, it's not really an Issa Mesir. What is it? It's an Issa Lashon Hara. Okay. It's an Issa Lashon Hara. And it's an iser of Aveda Sakum. It's an iser Aveda Sakum because the Goyish government knows that there are people stealing their money, and they want to catch all of the ganavim. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, what's the din of Aveda Sakum? You're not obligated to give it back, and the Gemara says it's an iser. Shabbos Aveda is a mitzvah. We all belong to a big club, all the Bnei Yisrael together. The Avnei Nezer has a whole section in his Shabbos Atshubas about Hilchas Ribis. So that section, he has practically sif by sif on the Shulchan Aruch, every sif in Shulchan Aruch. He has very sharp comments on Hilchas Ribis. So he calls that whole section Bris Achim, because the word Ribis is spelled with the same letters as Bris, that there's all the Jews belong to one big club, and we all have to support each other. We're not allowed to charge interest to each other. So the same Shabbos Aveda. Midine b'nei noach, the din should have really been finders, keepers, losers, weepers. Whoever lost the Aveda loses its ownership. Whoever finds it should have the right to keep it. But there's a din, whoever belongs to this club, the Bris Achim club, so we have to be nice to each other, give back our Shabbos Aveda. But to be meshiv Aveda Sakum, then you're treating the Nachri as if he's a member of the club, which he isn't. So the Gemara says, strictly speaking, there's an Iser to give back Aveda Sakum, unless you think that you'll accomplish a Kiddush Hashem, which usually is the case. If you give back Aveda Sakum, you probably will accomplish a Kiddush Hashem. They have in the biography of Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, he served as a rabbi in Europe, and the Balabatim in his community had a strange phenomenon happening when they would go to the post office to buy stamps. A few of them came, and quite a few came to ask the same shaila. They paid for the stamps, and the fellow in charge of the store gave him more change than they were entitled to. He gave more stamps than they were entitled to. So they would come home, and they would count up the money. They would ask Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, should they go give back the money or not? So he said, yes, it's not your money. Give it back. It belongs to the government. So then it turned out in the middle of the war when the Nazis were killing all the Jews, the non-Jew who worked in the post office saved the lives of many Jews in his village because they found out later he was testing the Jews because the Nazis published a lot of their propaganda that the Jews are all a bunch of ganavim and they're cheating everybody in business. So he was testing them to see if they're really cheating. So every single time that he gave him extra stamps or extra money, every single time they gave back the money. They said, look, Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky had Ruach HaKodesh, he knew how to save all the people. So when they mentioned it to Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, he said, Ruach HaKodesh, what Ruach HaKodesh? It's not your money. You don't have the right to keep the money. It's not your money. So strictly speaking, it's really be toa sakum or aveda sakum, should be mukhiv to give it back. But whenever you can possibly accomplish a kiddush Hashem, then the Gemara says that you are mukhiv to. So years ago, there were nursing home scandals. There were probably now also, there used to be nursing home scandals. Many of the nursing homes were owned by Jews. And they would not report the fact that people died, because for every patient that was in, from every person that was in a nursing home, they would get a certain amount of money from the government. And there were all kinds of shtiklach going on where they were making a fortune of money. So the different cases came up where people were taken to court. Employees in the nursing home were brought to court, all religious Jews. And that judge said, I want you know the information about this person. The FBI had information that they got from wiretapping. So that was illegal evidence. But they knew that this person who worked in the office of the nursing home can testify. He knows all the shtiklach that are going on. So they would require of him that he should testify against the owner of the nursing home. So I remember there was a certain Hasidish at Bezna at that time, sent a psak, that the person, and I remember the psak was hanging up, someone made a Xerox copy, I was hanging up in the Beis Medrash in YU, in the third floor and first hall, but we used to learn in Beis Medrash. So there was a Chassidish Bezden from Williamsburg, wrote a psak, and they give you chapter and verse, which sim and which sif in Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to testify against the other person, and even if it means that they'll put you in jail, even if they'll punish you because of being disrespectful to the court for not testifying, because the government knows that you know testimony. So they said, it says Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to testify. So we looked it up in Shulchan Aruch and said, just the reverse. It says Beferish, that if the judge knows that you know information and you're just withholding the information because the Jews all cover up on each other, that constitutes a Chilul Hashem, that the judge should realize that the Jews only cover up on each other, and the makom that you'll make a Kiddush Hashem, or the makom where there is a Chilul Hashem, so you are mechuyav to testify against the other person. So the Vilna Gaon explains why. Because the government knows that this man is guilty, but they don't have legal evidence. They got the evidence by wiretapping. But they know that he's guilty, and they know that you know that the Jews are covering up on him. So to maser someone to the government when he violated a gezel is an isra, is not an isra misira. Misira is like a roidif. It's an isra of aveda sakum. They're looking for the criminal. They lost their criminal. So aveda sakum, you mechuyev to give back whenever you'll accomplish a kiddush Hashem. So Shulchan Aruch, it's considered, that's called a kiddush Hashem. And to leave it the way it is, it's called a chilul Hashem. Not to testify against the other person is considered a chilul Hashem. These are some of the dinim of dinim of machusa dinim. Yeah, when it comes to Yerusha, there's a basic difference between Jewish Yerusha and non-Jewish Yerusha. By the Jews, if you have sons and daughters, the sons get all the Yerusha, the daughters don't get a penny. And if you have a Pchor and a Poshut, then the Pchor is entitled to Pishnaim, and the Pshutim only get one share. So already in the days of the Rishonim, this posed a problem that the girls will never forgive their father for not giving them a share in the Yerushan. So in the days of the Rishonim, they solved the problem by making a shtar chatzi zocher. They would be mechayev themselves, his chayvus, to give each one of the daughters a share, as if they, a half a share that each one of the sons is going to get. Let's say it turns out, each son is going to get, let's say, $100,000 or $500,000. So the daughter should get half of that amount. They quote from Rav Shlomo Zalman about that today, if you're only going to give the daughters a shtar chatzi zocha, they'll also be upset. They'll never forgive the father. So you should really see to it that you give the sons and the daughters an equal share. So how do you do that? So you just, if you're going to give the poor pishnaim, he's going to get twice as much as anybody else. That's also going to cause friction. It's also going to cause the problem. So that's in Hilchas Yerusha, the Ramah quotes from the Hagos Maimini that already the Balei HaTosfos used to arrange to change the percentages of the Yerusha in order that the women shouldn't have anything to complain about. So that's another topic for discussion. When does a person have a right to make a tzavua for Yerusha and when not? And how do you make it sabrot? And how do you make it legally binding that the daughter should get an equal share of the sons, or half a share, whatever? So that's, I guess, for another share. Okay? Everyone should be healthy. Maybe we should open the floor for questions. It's a good idea to go through the first tshuva in the Dvar Avraham. He has a lot of strong marmakimus about Dina and the Machus Adina. Very good.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Bakasha.
So according to the Chazon Ish, who says that when two Jews are entered into a business agreement with the understanding that they would be following Dina de Machusa, you said that sometimes it's better to have businessmen on the Beit Din. Would there be any different qualifications for the Dayanim in that circumstance? Or the qualifications for Dayanim would be the same, it just would be more wise to have businessmen?
They have to have qualifications. They have to be religious Jews who like tefillin and they observe Shabbos and Kashrus and so on. But they should know Dina de Machusa. A lot of times it's a good idea. You see, if I would be on a Beis Din and I would hear, I remember I was in Bati Dinim once in a while. I hear scandalous things, the way businessmen, they charge everything. They go away for Pesach, Teretz Yisrael, and take everything off as a business expense. I would consider them absolute gazlanim. They have business partners. And they're charging everything to the bidden, mamish gzeila. But if you would have, if the bezin wouldn't consist of rabbanim, it would consist of other businessmen, so they would know what the meaning hamdina is. A lot of the things that rabbanim or bnei yeshiva consider outright gezel gomur, businessmen would say, that's the meaning hamdina. A lot of people do it. It's not right, but they won't consider them mamish gazlanim. And the businessmen know better what the din of the machus is. Yeah. Sometimes it's a smarter idea to have, because we always encourage them to go for pshara, whenever you have a din Torah. We always encourage them to go for pshara, not for din. So pshara means a psak of whatever Yosha dictates. So what I think Yosha dictates is not always the same as what the businessman would think Yosha dictates. So if you're dealing with businessmen, the Baladinim are businessmen, so it's, maybe it makes better sense to have three businessmen, at least to have one. Remember once, they had a din Torah, so they had two rabbanim from the yeshiva, and the third dayan was a businessman, a musma from the yeshiva, who wasn't in learning for, he wasn't learning daf yomi or anything, but he was a religious man, and he knew business, so he was guiding us on what Yosha dictates.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Bakasha.
So, we discussed, from what I understand, we're considering a democracy kind of like a very, very large shutfus, like many different people connected in one giant corporation, but one giant partnership with all these many people. I know there's a Gemara which discusses that a Jew can't do business with a real Ovid Kochavim 3 days before or after his holiday. So the question is there a problem if there are some Americans, and I'm not talking about standard, you know, Christians who, you know, there's more of a question. I'm talking about really wacky religions. Is there a problem of being in any kind of shutfus with these people in the context of a democracy? Or is that completely not a relevant question?
Nah, I don't think it's relevant today. The reason why you're not allowed to go into business with a Ovid Avodah Zarah, Shema, maybe the court will require that he should swear. And he'll swear by Yoshke. But today they don't swear by Yoshke. The courts don't make you swear. I don't think it's relevant today. Very good. Okay. You should all stay out of trouble from the police.
Yeah. Thank you, Rabbi.
Very good. Okay.
Thank you.
Good. How about
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Very good.
Thank you.